One, two, and a three. Bonjour! Welcome to another live stream edition of Cafe David. Hey, James here, joined once again by Joda and Mr. Rene Dupree. Bonjour, gentlemen.
Bonjour, tout le monde. Where's our guest?
She'll be on soon. Very, very soon.
Yeah. How's the UK?
Shit. Shit. The cost of living's a fortune. Nurses are on strike, teachers are on strike, rail workers are on strike, you know, the usual since we left Brexit.
Yeah, there's a big strike with federal workers here in Canada too. They're wanting more.
I think the nurses over here has come to an agreement because they was on strike, but now I think they've actually come to an agreement. But the teachers are on strike. My kids are off. This past Thursday they was off, and I think they might be off again Tuesday.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
What are they complaining about now?
Money.
It's all about the money, right?
I wish I could have 6 weeks off in the summer. Just saying, you know, I don't get wrong, I appreciate it's hard work, but 6 weeks off in the summer, you know, paid and holidays. I don't get paid holidays. That's the downside of being self-employed.
Is there any exciting news and rumors in the world of professional wrestling?
Well, I'm going to throw the link for the Patreon up in the chat for anyone who is getting here and hasn't joined yet.
So for check anyone that out. Who has not joined our Patreon yet, here's your chance. As soon as this stream is done, we're going live to watch SmackDown.
The draft. It's the draft, Renee.
Is it?
It's the first night of the draft,
I can't wait. Well, usually the draft episodes are pretty interesting, though.
Yeah, man. You was number one back in 2004.
Sure.
Long time ago.
It's almost 20 years, man.
I know. That's fucking crazy.
Wow. 20 years goes by so fast.
Any memories from that night, Renee, when you were drafted that you maybe haven't shared yet? Keep it topical.
We're talking about almost 20 years ago, guys. Christ almighty. I was in the gym yesterday and some guy comes up to me and asks me if I remember him from 25 years ago. I'm like, pal, I have a hard time remembering breakfast. Asked me 25 years ago. Yeah, that was the starting of the big push, right? What happened? I think Steve came down and gave me a stunner.
Yeah. Was that the same night or was that the week before? Might have been the week before.
No, I did it like 2 or 3 weeks in a row. I got stunnered.
Right. Okay, then.
Yeah.
Because I know you got stunnered the night after Mania because that was pretty much the start of your singles push.
Yeah. What like when they start a push, I lose to Jericho, then get fucking stunnered.
Yeah. Someone actually wrote that on Twitter that they was on about your push and like, time in ECW and how it wasn't a fit.
Well, I was going to get a huge push till Vince came up to me and said, big things happening for you. And I said, yeah, right.
Why would you say that? Don't get wrong. Yeah, I know.
I've been told that by him several different times, right?
I know, but still, you know, the boss.
It reminds me of a story Pat once told me. I was too young to really understand what he was saying, but now it makes sense. He's like, Vince, his personality is, they were sitting by the pool writing television, right? And Vince had this big Mastiff dog, right? One of those huge English Mastiffs. And then he was like, Pat, watch this. And he had like a little milk bone, right? And the dog wanted it, but the dog would start drooling, right? And then he'd take it away and start laughing, and then take it away and start laughing, and then take it away and just watch the dog drool. And then Pat would finally say, give him the fucking bone. And then he'd give it to him. What was he trying to tell me? Explain to me there. Describe.
It's a metaphor. The push.
Right. Big. So the big dog.
Tease him with the push. Yeah.
Right. The big dog is like the wrestler. And the milk bone is like the dollar bill. Right?
Yeah.
He won't just give it to you. He wants to watch you just fucking drool. You know what I mean? And Pat was the voice of reason to say, okay, give it to him. You understand?
That's almost like scary, kind of crazy. Yeah. This.
Isn't there like a term for that? Sociopath or something?
Yeah, it's like sociopathic.
Psychopath.
Yeah.
Not about sociopath.
That's the way Vince is. You know, when he gets off when wrestlers fighting with each other, right?
Yeah, man. Brett and Sean, he was all over that.
Yeah, it's like he gets off on the control he has over you or whatever, right? So.
I've just messaged Celeste anyway, just said ready when she is. So hopefully she'll be on soon. As for the rest of the world, the crazy world of professional wrestling, yeah, I think everything's about the draft tonight. Who's going to go where? And what the future for the world title is going to be. Yeah.
What do you think of the new belt?
Oh, yeah.
Me? Yeah. I like it. Don't get me wrong, I would have preferred it had they just brought back Big Gold. But if they are going to update it and, you know, stick their brand on it, I haven't got too many complaints. It's going to sell a shitload of toys. So, because there's loads of and replicas, because you can imagine how many people's already got the Big Gold belt. So, if you've got a new version, they're only going to sell more replicas. And you know yourself, end of the day, it's all business, it's all about the money, and it's a lot better than what they've currently got. So I'm not saying it's the best belt ever, but it's definitely amongst the rest, I would say it's the best one.
I like it.
Yeah.
We got our first super chat of our good pal, Rex.
Rex.
Let's see. Rex, thank you. Besides Macho and Triple H, any rumors of Steph sleeping with a wrestler?
No comment.
Join our Patreon and all those questions and many, many more will be answered.
He already is on the Patreon. Tune in tonight, Rex, on the SmackDown. We'll answer it.
Jonah, put up that link, would you? For the
Check it out. Everyone should go join the Patreon. Definitely a lot of good content already out and more coming.
We need to discuss, by the way, what's going to be our first pay-per-view review or slash watch-along. So, are we going Hulkamania era or are we going Attitude? I actually just watched SummerSlam 98 last night. Great show.
Was that the Highway to Hell?
Yeah.
I watched that one live. Well, I watched the main event live. Not there, but I watched it on pay-per-view. We were done. I was wrestling and we finished the show. Then we went to the wrestlers I was with, his buddy, and they were watching it. Is that where Taker does a leg drop from the top rope to the outside to a table?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Badass. You had that Triple H for the Rock and the Ladder match for the IC belt. That was a good match. Another good match as well, probably overlooked, was the hair versus hair match between X-Pac and Jeff Jarrett. That was a fun little match.
Did Jeff lose his hair?
Yeah, that's when they cut it short because he always had the long flowing blonde. So that's when they finally cut it because it was the storyline because Howard Finkel was involved and they shaved Howard Finkel like a couple of weeks earlier. Wow. So Howard Finkel's coming up with X-Pac and he's doing the clutch chop.
Dude,
so.
Me and Jonah watched AEW. I can't get over how good... Jeff Jarrett looks for 55 years of age.
Amazing, isn't it?
Holy Christ. You got six-pack abs.
Yeah.
Still the best worker in the company. I bet. Right, I bet you had the best match. Am I wrong?
Huh?
I said, I bet you had the best match. Am I wrong?
Psychology-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are awesome athletes, but just the... It's flat-ass fucking backwards compared to what the way I was taught.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because, well, I know Jeff teams up with Jay Lethal, and Jay Lethal's a very good wrestler. I've always been a fan of Jay Lethal.
We got another chat.
We do. Charles, thank you. What's up, buds? Y'all's pick for the first winner of the new belt. I got Lashley. Also think Balor would be a great choice. I've actually heard Seth Rollins' name thrown around quite a bit myself for this new belt. What do you think,
Jim? Call it title, Jonah.
Belt holds up your jeans, man.
I don't know.
Good accent.
I mean, that'd be a great way to bring someone up from NXT and give them a major shove, right? You know what I mean?
Braun Breaker, perhaps. Yeah. That's the only one I could think of, at least, in NXT. Who would believably come up and win the world title.
Well, they done that with Balor when they first brought in the Universal title. Balor only got drafted to Raw like 3 or 4 weeks earlier, and he was actually the first guy to win it straight from NXT.
Is that the last time he was in that position, like the world title picture?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a couple of feuds, but yeah, he won the belt, fucked up his shoulder that night. Next night, he had to vacate it.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be Seth Rollins, myself as well.
Just wait and see. Are they having a tournament for it, or?
They will be. I think, they're having a Night of Champions. I don't know how big the tournament will be when the show is on. Might be like a 4-man tournament, but they'll probably be having like a tournament up to that point. You know what I mean? Easy television as well.
Rex says modern wrestling talent is awesome. It's the psychology that's the issue. Look at how they pace a match to how they look at the crowd.
I have to agree with you there, Rex. Like we watched that Sammy Guevara versus Darby Allin.
Yeah, the 6:30 through the table.
Yeah, I'm thinking, are they trying to bury Darby? Like, who does he have heat with? Because Sammy, as the heel, he's outshining the babyface with all these awesome fucking moves, dude.
Yeah.
And then, like, Darby does a fucking suicide dive to the outside, and then Sammy counters him with a cutter on the outside, which looked fucking sweet. But then again, it's the heel outshining the babyface on everything. I'm thinking, and then Sammy's doing the fucking Eddie Guerrero tribute. Okay, that's great, but you're going to get a babyface pop. And then they did the old Eddie finish with the belt. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Title. Where they throw the title to, like, he knocks himself out and he throws the title to his opponent and then the ref catches him.
Right.
Well, that's not, it's an old Eddie spot, so you know that the crowd's going to pop for it. So it's anyway, flat ass fucking backwards. But they had a packed house, so they're doing something right.
I came across a Eddie video the other day of him like lying, cheating, stealing, like all these match finishes and things like that. There was the one I think it was against the Basham Brothers, and he gets the cat of nine tails whip, and he whips the referee, gives it to, I think it was Doug Basham. The referee's turning around like, what the fuck? It's funny.
Yeah, man. Talented. He could do anything, man. He could do all the lucha stuff, but then he could just work in American style psychology and comedy. Fuck, he could do it all, man. God, that was such a loss.
Fixtreme Bob. Okay, Fixtreme. Boys. Lager time. TGIF. Yes, definitely.
How was your work week, Jonah? Were you busy?
Yeah, this was a busy work week. And then chugging along, getting over this sickness too, you know. But
was it the COVID? You didn't catch the COVID, did you?
Oh, I don't think I caught. No, I don't think I caught COVID. Just cold, but I tried my best to give it away to somebody else so it could get out of my system really quick, you know. And and I could be here to watch AEW.
Gerardo.
Let's see. Hey, all. Yeah, how's it going?
One, yeah.
Just got here, so I apologize. We talked about where are all your thoughts on CM Punk allegedly at Raw? Yeah, that's big news, and apparently being asked to leave. So he was really there. I thought it was just a rumor, but like it's confirmed. He was definitely backstage. Did you see the reason yet, James?
Yeah, apparently he was on the flight from Florida to wherever they was, and he was on the flight, and there was like some WWE talent on the flight, and I think they basically invited him to come backstage. So when backstage, they kind of said that he was trying to make peace with people, so he spoke to The Miz, who he's had a lot of heat with, spoke to Triple H for a few minutes, and I think he said something to Triple H, like, I like to talk to more people, and Triple H was like, I gotta run it by the big guy. Soon as McMahon heard about it, Punk was on his way out the building.
Wow.
He got escorted out. So, yeah, I don't think he'll be coming back to WWE anytime soon. Unless it's a big angle, big work. Don't know, but apparently that's what happened anyway. So what's your thoughts on that, Renee? Before we go to the next one, like, because this is a topical thing to talk about. Do you think... Because there's rumors that he is going back to AEW, and that's why they're creating this new show on Saturdays, because where himself and the likes of Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks do not get along at all, Tony Khan's basically decided, right, I'll make a new show, basically have a draft, so we can keep these two separate, so I've got both guys working for me. So do you think it's weird if I actually went backstage for Raw? And do you think he might be looking for a job, or what's your opinion on it?
Well, if he's got heat with all the top guys and decision makers, because they're all EVPs, right? The Bucks and Kenny Omega, whatever.
Yep.
So, I don't know if he was smart with his money. Probably doesn't need a job, but that's the thing, man. He probably came back and he got that fucking itch to come back and wrestle, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't think he need. I don't. Fuck. Isn't he still getting paid?
Still getting paid. I don't think he needs money. I think he's done really well for himself, so money's not an issue, I don't think.
Well, I'd be pissed on Tony Khan. Jesus Christ, he's paying this guy, what, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month? And he shows up to the other guys. I mean, what the, you know?
Yeah.
They're just using that guy. I feel bad for that Tony Khan, man.
I do. My kid brother, he watches AEW. And I can't help but I want Tony Khan to succeed because he's just a wrestling fan, but they're just taking so much advantage of the poor guy, and because he's just a fan, he's a mark with money, let's be honest. He just wants to please everyone, but yeah, they're rinsing him big time.
You know, in this business, when you're a promoter, man, as much as people dislike Vince, he that's the way you got to be. It's a business.
Yeah. Yeah.
It did seem, Renee, like you were into the Owen Hart announcement. Something they said that they're gonna end the tournament rounds in Japan, or I forget what the actual announcement was, but on AEW that when Tony Khan came on,
I didn't listen to him. What did he say?
I think it had to do with the Owen Hart. That could correct me, but something with the Owen Hart tournament, I think, ending in New Japan at one of the New Japan shows.
Sometime. Oh, really?
Because they're
showing some old footage of Owen in New Japan, right?
Yeah.
Before I get the next one, I sent a message to Jonah. What's your thoughts on Jerry Springer passing away?
Yeah, that was really sad. Who, Renee or I?
Do I know Jerry Springer? Renee?
No, he passed away.
Yeah, 79, right?
Yeah.
What was the cause?
I don't think they've said anything. I think they say he just died peacefully in his sleep.
Well, if you're going to go, that's the way to do it. All right, next question.
Renee, have you ever thought of opening a wrestling school and or reopening Grand Prix Wrestling? Not enough old school wrestling out there. Hi, J&J.
Yeah, I promoted about 100 shows. But the way I do it is different, right? Majority of people, they'll run one show a month or maybe one show every – I did tours. And the first time I did it, I did like 28 or 29 shows in 30 days. And wrestled and helped set up the ring. And sometimes did the announcing. Jesus Christ, that was stressful. That was my OCD kicking in. But a wrestling school – I don't know if I have the patience, to be honest. I really don't. And then I know Lance Storm had good success with his, right?
I think so.
But they ultimately ended up shutting down, so maybe. I don't know. Right now, I haven't been gone from wrestling long enough to really miss it yet. You understand? So never say never, but. Right now,
we dragged you back in with this podcast, don't we?
Yeah,
kicking and screaming.
He's back to a weekly watcher now,
right?
Yeah,
speaking of weekly watching, if you have not yet joined our Patreon, folks, join it. Could you put up the link on the screen?
Yeah,
we got some good. Guest going to join us next Wednesday for Dynamite. Ben Hamim has confirmed that he's going to come on and watch the show with us. And if Paul London would actually get cable, he could watch it with us as well.
I need to set up. I need to get mine set up. I've got an idea how to do it. So, yeah, I'm going to have to be a buccaneer and do it.
Where's our guest? Did you message her?
Message her. I've just emailed her saying ready when you ask. So hopefully she will be on.
All right.
Charles, thank you. Shout out from North Carolina, I'm assuming, right? Did you all see Chavo Barry Ray in WWE for prostituting the Guerrero name? I don't agree. Thoughts? Also love Paige's new group in AEW. Well, first I'll say, yeah, I did see that. But I also think – I don't know if I believe it or not, because there was a lot that came out afterwards, like Chavo tweeting after, like, that's how you be a perfect heel, hook, line, sink them. Like, I couldn't tell. It started all on a question he was asked on a podcast, and his answer was pretty to the point about Ray using Eddie's, like, lineage in his own career now. And Chavo was like, we appreciate it, but we don't need you. And then Chavo continued to tweet about it. But then afterwards, Chavo came out and said, like, you know, he was just being a heel, so I don't know myself.
Well, that could either be him trying to cover up because of the backlash that that statement received, so he can just say, I was just trying to be a heel. Or I don't know why they don't bring Chavo in for that angle, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be perfect. But...
would be.
I haven't seen Paige's new group. Who's in it? They weren't on Wednesday, were they?
I don't think they were. Paige, if he's talking about Paige, not Hangman Paige, Saraya has who is it? Tony Storm and
Ruby yeah, Soho. Yeah.
Exactly. What's the name of them again? Do you know, James?
No idea.
They definitely have a name.
Absolution. What are they called?
That was the last group she had.
I don't know. The Bad Girls or something like that.
Yeah. They have a name that's very similar to Damage Control. I just don't know. They are basically Damage Control. Each team seems very interchangeable, but.
Yeah, you said Ruby's Lars Fredrickson. He's the bass player for Rancid. He's a huge wrestling fan, right? Yeah, I met him backstage at a Corcoran Hall show when I was working for All Japan. He was opening a tattoo studio in Japan and promoting tattoos for kids. Like, number one, Japan's the wrong place to open a tattoo studio. I mean, people do have tattoos there, but it's really frowned upon because of the connection it has to the Yakuza.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I don't think many kids are going to be getting tattoos in Japan. It's not like North America or Western culture. Anyway, next question.
Rex, thank you. In your opinion, who was more talented, Chris Benoit or Eddie? Which do you think had more passion? Who had more dedication?
Overall, like putting the charisma factor in, Eddie. Because as believable as, I mean, don't get me wrong, Chris was, there's no one else you could suspend disbelief. Like if I want to show someone wrestling for the first time and try to make them believe it's real, you put on a Chris Benoit match, dude. Right? But as far as entertainment with charisma and all that shit, Eddie, by far. Right? Because he could do anything. You can make him serious, but he could also do comedy. Chris, I don't think, ever did comedy.
He had a little bit when he was tagging with Chet, but he was like the most serious of the two.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, Liv. Yeah.
As far as, I think they were equally as passionate, but as far as dedication, like Chris would never cheat on his diet, man. Like he never eats sweets. He would still do like 500 Hindu squats every day at TV and shit.
Wow.
Yeah. Was because he actually trained in the Japanese dojos, right? Lived there for like a, I don't know if it was a year or, yeah. So,
I got asked a question earlier, Renee. Yeah, they mentioned it would it be possible to get a security guard on the show. I don't know if it was the same one me and you spoke about briefly. What was that name of that security guard you was thinking of inviting one day?
Oh, did you guys ever watch the movie Super Troopers?
Yeah, like bits of it. I know what you mean.
Okay, well, he was the guy driving the truck.
Right. Like
Kimpo Soap or something.
Right.
There was a black security guard and a white security guard. They both had the first same name. Jimmy Noonan. Yeah. Yeah, I got right. along with him great.
Right.
He's on Facebook.
Oh, right. Because these lads, they was talking about this other security guard who used to wear like a backwards Triple H cap. But I think he was just before your time.
Yeah, he wasn't there. He was fucking jacked.
Yeah, that's who they was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, he was bigger than the boys.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have to.
He was gone by the time I got there.
Right.
And then I remember the first time I went backstage, it was in my hometown with Molly Holly, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had this security guard, and he was a prick.
Yeah.
He was gone by the time I got there, too. But I think, yeah, he had that New York accent, but he was just not a nice guy at all. Yeah.
What was the name of the WCW one? He was like a real head of police or something like that.
Oh,
Gray. He was gray headed, wasn't he? Gray beard.
Yeah.
Fucking cool now.
Chavo,
man. Yeah. Yeah. Is he still about?
I was listening to a Bobby Heenan shoot, and I guess you know what he did? He drove the motorcycle at funerals.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know when there's funerals and the police or whatever, like, drive the...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember there was one security guard also, you just jogged memory from, I think it was in ECW, and then he went to, he might have been in, like, early TNA. He had, like, a mustache and, like, a mullet, and he was always dressed
like the fat one.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just nice. Yeah. He was always in like not a suit, but he had a blazer. Usually had like a blazer on. It just jogged my memory. He's in a lot of crowd fights, I think. Yeah.
Is that Atlas Security?
Oh, yeah. That does sound very familiar, actually. Atlas Security. I don't know why, but.
Yeah.
Imagine the stories of working as a security guard for ECW, like the, like back, you know, when they'd cut those promos and the crowd would try to rush it.
Yeah, we should get some of those security guards on. They they see a lot of cool shit that we don't see.
Well, yeah, and if like that's behind them, I mean, they've got really nothing to lose to talk about, have they? They're not exactly looking to get into the ring again.
Right.
They're the best guests.
There was Jimmy Noonan and there was Jimmy Tillis. He was the black Jimmy. He was cool as shit too.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. Just use carry on. I've just got a email.
Rex, thank you. Renee, think you probably have more patience than you think. You got unique aspect of old world wrestling to the new. You wrestled Japan and America. You're more than qualified than many to train.
Why, thank you, Rex.
That's a good compliment.
It is. It is. I just really don't know if I enjoy it. I've done seminars and stuff, but it's to find how many people actually want to do it and where I'm situated in the world. It's not like it's not very populated. And although I do own apartment buildings, so I mean, I could make that a part of the deal, because I know when Lance had his school, a lot of people would fly in from Europe and stuff to be trained by him. But they had to like furnish their own place to stay and stuff. I could make that a part of the deal. Like, okay, I'll hook you up with an apartment and a vehicle and a gym membership and write out your diet. You know what I mean? I guess.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty good deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe someday, the actual,
I don't know.
Right. Right. The actual training they do themselves. But you'd give them all the pieces.
Well, or maybe
train them to.
Yeah, maybe someday. She's coming.
Someday,
yeah, she's in Central Time, so she's got time to catch up. She said, "Can I still join?" I said, "Yeah, more than happy to still join." So hopefully she'll be on quite soon. She just sent me a message on Instagram.
She lives in Texas, right?
I think so. Yeah, yeah, Central must be. Yeah,
Houston. I used to live there.
Oh, cool.
Big stream. Thank you. I must go for a beer run. Understandable. But leaving this back rake as a finisher for our guest when she does arrive, please don't forget. I'll save this one for you, Big Stream.
I loved did you ever see the Paul Heyman when he said you can get any move over as a finisher? For example, a headlock. He said if you had Mark Henry applying that, and the rest of the sound that you can get a headlock over as a finisher, well, it's a matter of having the opponent sell the move to make it believable.
Sure. Look at fucking John Cena's finish.
Yeah, it's literally just...
right? Yeah. What else? I mean, Hulk Hogan had a leg drop.
I've heard the Samoan spike get criticized a lot because all it is really just taking a thumb. I mean, you are putting it into the throat, but like just a thumb.
That would hurt, I think, if you're jamming your thumb in someone's throat. I think that would actually hurt you.
I think it would hurt like your thumb. It would hurt, but it might hurt the thumb too. Like you just, all you're using
is
that's
why you taped it all up, right?
True.
If it's stabilized. I think anything Umaga would do to you would hurt.
I'm going to tell my kids to do that at the tournament next month. Jam your throat with it. Jam your phone in the throat. Someone spike them. All these little 10-year-olds fall into the floor. Reminds me of the Stevie Richards and the Boogie Man story. That's funny. She's on soon.
Oh, cool. This is you throw this up, Charles. Thank you. Underrated pay per view, No Mercy 2002. Thoughts?
Yes.
I can't remember. So for our Patreon, James, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna put a list of pay per views and let the fans vote on it?
Yeah. So I'm currently working on the top 5 West WWE champions video. So I've made me a list. I've wrote me script, so that should be coming out soon. And then the pay-per-views, I think that's going to be a once-a-month thing. So I'm gonna put a poll up, and I'll pick something from. What era do you just want to start off with? Like the golden days or Hulkamania era? Or do you want to go attitude? You're the boss.
Hulkamania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've reviewed all the Hulkamania pay per views anyway.
I can be a fan again.
Yeah, I'll put on the Patreon for everyone to vote for it. And then, yeah, we either do a watch along or we can do a review. But with that said, our special guest has now joined us, former WWE Divas Champion and the very first winner of the Women's NXT, the one and only Miss Celeste Bonin. Celeste, how are you doing today?
I'm doing amazing. I am so sorry I'm late. I had a classic not looking at the time zone, and I went to check. Anyways, I'm a little flustered, but I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for the introduction, and I'm just catching my breath. I'm super excited catching up on what you guys are talking about.
We're just talking shit about you, that's all.
I mean, I get it. No, I'm super excited that you guys asked me to come on. I haven't done a wrestling podcast in a long time, so I'm super excited. So I'm very grateful to be here, and thanks for your patience with me.
No problem at all.
So you're from Houston, correct?
Yes, yeah, Texas, born and raised.
What part?
So I live in kind of south, like Lake City area, but I was actually born in Galveston, and so I grew up in like Galveston, Kima area. Are you familiar with it?
I used to live in Spring.
Okay, I played soccer in Spring in high school.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Houston's huge, like the Houston area, all the surrounding areas.
Yeah, man. It's like the second largest city in the U.S., isn't it?
It's insane, yeah. And I'm like, is it? And then I'll go from Lake City into town, and I'm like, yeah, it definitely is.
Cool. So let's talk about your wrestling career. What year did you start? Now, were you a wrestler before you got to WWE, or?
No. I started in 2010, actually. I had just like a cool opportunity to try out. I had a friend of mine. We had a spray tan business together. And we were trying to, you know, just get our name out there and stuff. And we ended up meeting somebody in the fitness industry. And he had been in the developmental program in Tampa for a few years. And so he was trying to get connected with the recruitment process, I guess. And so he sent our information over, you know, bios and pictures and stuff. I think it was, why is it slipping my mind? Who did it used to be, the talent guy?
Was it Ty Bailey?
Ty Bailey, yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, so I just tried out. I had no experience, but I was just, you know, I was really athletic, and I had a really great, I think, mindset towards, like, doing the promos that, you know. And so it was cool. I put it all out there, you know. I did a week at FCW, and then I got 2 weeks later, I got a call like that I got hired. And so it was the first time that I moved outside of Texas. So I had lived in Houston area my whole life until I was 23, and then I moved to Tampa to start at FCW.
So was Steve Kern still in charge then?
Steve Kern was there. Man, it was like, yeah, Norman Smiley, Doc Tom, Dusty. It was like, yeah, it was the crew. It's funny to think of FCW. I mean, gosh, it's been a long time now, but compared to the Performance Center, it's insane. Such a huge, huge change.
So I went to FCW like when it first opened or whatever. I was still with the company then, and they hadn't gone to the big building that they were in. So we were training in like this storage unit warehouse. And they were packing like canned foods on one side, and they had two rings set up with no AC. It was pretty brutal. And I came like, well, I went away for a little bit. I went to the mental institution, and then
as all the great ones do.
Oh, high five.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later if you're okay with it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Share that. Okay.
Yeah.
So we were training. I was there with the Bella Twins and Brooke Adams. She's another Houston native, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I met met Brooke through like doing like bikini contest circuits and stuff in Houston. And then I saw her on TV and I was like, no shit. And so I've always kind of like crossed paths, but never been friends. But it's so I was kind of never there when she was, or we just, you know, knew all the same people. But she's pretty dope. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how you started. Like, you were in fitness. Did you do like physique contests and stuff?
Yeah, I used to do figure competitions, and I right before I had got the opportunity to try out, I was training for my first bodybuilding show. I was like making the switch. I don't know what I was doing. You know, I was like really young, and I'm like, oh, fitness is my thing. And then I started competing in figure, and then I was like, you know, I don't know, the classes change all the time, and I was like so obsessed with it, you know. And then so I was like, I'm gonna change for bodybuilding. And then I had the opportunity to try out, so I just kind of never looked back.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long were you with the company total?
4 years. Yeah. So
4 years?
I had started, I moved to Tampa and I started FCW, and I was there for a few weeks, and like literally just learning, taking bumps and headlock takeovers and stuff. And they were, it was like super behind the scenes, but they were getting ready to launch the third season of NXT, which was the women's season. And so everybody that was there, pretty much the only women that were there, besides me and Christina Crawford, which is Alicia Fox's sister, besides the two of us, all the other girls were going up on the show, but it was kind of like a secret. So I was there, but I didn't know. And then they had hired Lindsay, I think her name is Lindsay Hayward, the super tall, like 6 foot 8, 6 foot 9 wrestler chick. She was like this supposed to be the big feature for season 3. And so she came in, and then so they kind of told everybody what was happening, and I like watched her in the ring with the girls, and I was like, holy shit. And then a couple of days before, well, so I learned about it and I was like, this is so cool. And, you know, I was just getting there and just getting my feet wet and kind of learning just, you know, what was what. And then they started, you know, getting all the content done for the show, their intros, doing all the, you know, the stuff for TV. And I was just like, this is so cool. And then like 3 or 4 days before the show debuted, because they were, it was when NXT season 3 went live, it was airing on, I forget what network, but it was only on TV for 5 weeks, and then they moved it just to online, like overseas and stuff. But they filmed it. It was live, and they filmed it right before SmackDown, I think on Tuesdays. And so it was like a Friday, and I got a call from John Laurinaitis, and he was like, "You're up, kid." And so what had happened is they had let go Lindsay, who they brought in to be like the big, you know, feature of the show, because they had, I guess there was like some work that she had done on the internet that didn't quite align with like the messaging that, you know, WWE was trying to go into. And so they were like, it's not going to work. And so they were like, you're next. And so they like pulled me up, and I was like crying just because I was just like, you know, I had no idea what to expect, but I was like, this is what I signed up for. They like had me a pair of boots made overnight by, what is it, Stagecoach boots. It was really cool, but I like, and I had just moved, and I was like bartending and going to just community college and stuff. So you know, I didn't have a lot of money when I started, and I was like getting developmental pay, but I was like, I don't have any money to buy like anything to wear on TV or gear. And so I went to this school. They told me to go to the school, and they gave me like petty cash, and they're like, go buy diva outfits, go buy stuff. And I was just like freaking out the whole time. But it ended up being like just a crazy experience, like just literally wrestling for some of my first times on live television. And you know, they were trying to put me, the other girls had, you know, most of them had a few years experience, but I was just like so unsure of myself and just so not familiar with being in the ring, and like, you know, not really understanding hard cam. You know, it was like a crash course in learning like all these things. And I know that's like that for a lot of people, and I consider myself extremely fortunate to have started that way, because like I didn't have a lot of chances to overthink anything, you know, which is like, all right. So I kind of like I got sucked in super fast and learned a lot really quickly, but definitely had so many moments of feeling like really embarrassed of myself on TV, you know, just like not knowing anything and not having any idea. And just like kind of getting shit for it, which I understood, you know, like I just showed up and I'm like, hey guys. But you know, I was trying really hard, and I learned a lot about myself and just like a lot about people in the world, and just a really cool experience to have started like that.
Oh, who were some of the girls that were very helpful
Man,
since you were
I
school, you and stuff?
I had there was quite a few. There was quite a few actually. AJ, she helped me so incredibly much. She taught me so much from the very beginning. We were like instantly friends, just from like FCW. And she was really helpful when I first found out that I was going to be going up on the road with NXT. She was awesome. Her and I like were so tight, and so she taught me a lot. Beth was a really amazing. Natalia was amazing. So like Eve was incredible. So many there. I had so many people that were willing to be like, I know you don't know what you're doing. I know it's not normal for me to help you in this way because it's like, you gotta, earn it. And like, there were so many things I didn't know and like just didn't understand nuances of stuff. And they were like really kind and graceful with me. And I mean, I certainly had moments where I didn't have a warm welcome in the locker room, but I understood that. And then I was also pretty socially awkward too because I just in a lot of moments I just didn't have any confidence in myself. I'm like, what am I doing here? So that definitely affected how I related with the other girls. Like I felt like I didn't really have a lot of like relational skills, and I didn't really understand my where I was at like amongst them. And so it was just like kind of really confusing. And I think that everybody experiences that in their own way. But I was really fortunate in so many ways. Vicky Guerrero, she was incredible. But Barbie, like all of them helped me in some way, along the way. And there was a few that just really, really took me under their wing. And so I'm super grateful for those moments.
So let's talk about some great memories. They made you Divas champion at one point in time, right?
Yeah, that was nuts. That was nuts. It's a cool story. Fit Finley, he was like the women's agent for, he was just the women's agent. He had that touch. He had that ability to like, smooth things over and help us kind of understand to work together in a lot of moments where where there wasn't a lot of TV time or, and that's everyone's, battle, I think. But when I got there, it was kind of in the prime time of the women getting like 3 minutes, and so it felt like very cutthroat. Like everybody just, everybody wanted to shine. Everybody wanted to be able to show what they had and display like their talent and their magic and stuff. And it's hard. So anyways, so Fit was amazing. He had to leave for like a year. Something had happened on an overseas tour, like something with like a flag and a gimmick, and WWE had to essentially like let him go for like a year. At least that's what I understood the
Oh, I
text
know
says.
the story. So what
Yeah.
happened was he used to do this with my tag team. My tag team was like the evil French foreigners. So you know how they start off every show with the American national anthem,
Yeah.
right? So one of the main sponsors who happened to be at that show was like the, I think it was the US Army. And what he did was he cut off the American national anthem at the beginning of the show to have the heel come out, and that really pissed off the sponsor, which was the yeah, so they had no choice but the shit can't fit.
Yeah.
So you were at that show when that happened?
I wasn't even at it. I wasn't at it. I found out when he was gone. Like I kind of
Oh.
just heard what was happening, and all the girls were like really upset. And of course. And so we went through a, Gold Dust was with us for a little bit, Bill DeMott. Like we just had people that were really, they were trying to find that new fit, and not literally not a new fit, but a new fit for like, who the producers were going to be. So anyways, like, so I was kind of just, when I ended up winning NXT season 3, and so I got a spot on the main roster. And so, but I didn't get a big debut. I was supposed to be, debuting on SmackDown. He's a character on SmackDown or a talent on SmackDown. But there was just kind of like, it kind of fizzled out because I just needed more training. Like I just needed to, just kind of understand things a little bit more. And so I just kind of ended up being in this like weird floating area where I was like going to every TV, and I was getting booked for live events but not wrestling. So I was like, doing the mic and the announcing and stuff. And then I started getting to wrestle live events, which was so incredible. It's where I learned everything, and then but I just wasn't on TV, and I'd be in like backstages or like just random segments for like holidays, when Mick Foley was there, just stuff like that. And then one day Fit just shows up. He just comes back, and we were all like, what? And I was like walking by Gorilla. I remember the moment. I was like, what are you doing here? And he's like, why aren't you on TV? Like, why aren't you on TV? And that night, We had a Divas Battle Royal for the like a title shot, and at the time Layla had the title, and Eve was supposed to be going over. They were going to have a feud, and I had been in the background like writing all these ideas for this feud with Eve and I on SmackDown for this like position for like the assistant GM and stuff. And it was like gaining. It was like we were getting segments and stuff, and it was building to. Like a feud where we're going to be in the ring. And I remember the first day that we were getting in the ring after we had like really like, you know, pushed this idea and we're, and had gained some momentum and we're really excited about it. Vince like changes it, you know, the deal, like he changes the match and he's like, no, I think, you know, and so the whole story kind of got thrown away. And, but we had gotten ourselves, like, we had established ourselves like a little bit of a story on TV. And so it was like, I had originally been booked to get eliminated like second, you know, like, you know, really early on in the match. And it was like, he's like, you're going to stay in there with Eve, second to last. Eve's going to go over, you know, here's the spot. And I was like, oh, shit, you know, I'd like never been in a battle royal for that long and done anything substantial when it was all of us. And, so this spot, it was the first time Brad Maddox had ever refereed live TV. So it was a Raw. And so the last spot was I was supposed to clothesline Eve over and she's to hang on and pull me over. And I go to clothesline her and she didn't like, it wasn't enough. It wasn't hard enough. And so she's like, hit me again. So I run and hit the ropes and I like hit the shit out of her and she falls over and she can't even hang on. I hit her so hard. So she gets eliminated. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's Raw. And Brad Maddox was like, oh my God. Cause it was like, he was the first time roughing live TV. And it's like the spot, you know, the finish gets like messed up. And so they're in his ear and they're like, celebrate. So he just grabs my hand. It was like the most like shoot win of all time. We were just like, oh my God. I was like, am I going to get fired? And it was crazy. And so I celebrate and I was just like, I can't believe it. And so I get back to Gorilla and the whole time I'm like, shit, 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 shit. And like I get back there, of course, like I see Eve, she's crying, and then I look at Vince and he's laughing, and I was like, okay, I'm not gonna get fired. And it was like, it was just so. And then so as soon as I got out of Gorilla, Tom Casillo, he was writing for the women at the time, and he was like really rooting for that storyline that Eve and I had. And so he felt terrible when he broke the news to me that we weren't gonna get to have a match, and kind of the story kind of got squashed. And he comes up to me and he's like, oh my God, we did it. He's like, you know, a lot of the girls are coming up to me and asking how we can write you out of the story and all this stuff. Cause I just wasn't really prevalent at all in anything. And so the girls are just like, eh, whatever. But I got the storyline and that led me to the feud I had with Eve and where I eventually won the title. And through that whole like time, Eve was so incredible. She was already on her way out. She knew that she was going to be retiring. And so she like gave it all. Like we had like unbelievable matches on live events. Like she taught me so much. I feel like I got so much experience one-on-one with her. And then, so I won the title in Houston, which is so rare. I was like babyface winning the title in Houston. And it was, Eve was retiring. So this was on the 20th anniversary of Raw. And so we had done a house show at MSG the night before. So we had, you know, had a flight to Texas. But I was like, I had done one other show at MSG and it was like a big battle role and I was in it for like a second, you know, I was like still so new. And so this was my second time getting to perform at MSG and I had a singles match and we had Arn as our producer. And he was like, he was always telling me all the time. He's like, you should wrestle like Beth. You should wrestle like Beth. You should, you know, and so anytime like he would come give me stuff, I'd be like, well, I have to do it. It's like Arn's telling me this, but I was like so afraid and unsure of myself. And I just didn't see myself in that way. So he like pulls me aside and he's like, before that MSG match, because he knew that, you know, we had that title match the next day. And he's like, he gave me the finish and he was like, you're going to do a spear. And I was like so nervous and like, I'm like, who am I? You know, I'm just like such feeling like such an imposter. And it was incredible. It was like, it was so cool. And so then because it went over so well at MSG, like on the house show, I got to do that in my title match. And that's how I won the championship. And so it was like this crazy story. Like I felt like so lucky and so fortunate along the way, but just like freaking out the whole time. I was like, it's all happening so fast. But it was a ride. It was really cool.
That's where I won my title the first time too, in Houston. That's kind of a cool coincidence.
That's dope. Was it at the Toyota Center?
Yeah, the big one.
Yeah. That's cool. It's a great arena.
It is. I really like Houston. Really like it a lot. We got a whole bunch of questions from the fans to ask you. Jonah,
can cool.
you
start? They're coming in. Yeah,
I have we're gonna... I have the bladder of an 85-year-old man.
Yeah.
I'll be right back, okay?
Cool.
All right, here we go. We've got one saved before you got here. This is a good fan of the show. Fixstream Bob, he had to go on a beer run, but he wants to know your opinions on the back rake as a finisher.
I gotta be like, I love this question. I feel like a little perplexed by it, but not really. I feel like it's like, it's one of those things that it looks so strong and it's like such an impressive thing, but I feel like it's a little bit anticlimactic, you know, personally. Definitely. That it gets kind of like a wah-wah feeling to me, but it does look so powerful and strong, I think, as a move or something leading to a finish. But yeah, as a finisher, it doesn't do it for me.
Maybe like a signature or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Josh Jones, rise above self-harm. Thank you so much for the donation. Hi, all. I do a lot of speeches and videos for mental health awareness and to share my mental health journey. That's awesome. I watch a lot of passionate wrestling promos to help me out. What's your favorite passionate wrestling promo?
Oh man, I don't know. That's amazing, Josh. Yeah. This is so cool. And I saw Rise Above Self Harm. I actually did I had a call with somebody today. He's from England. He started a magazine called Rise of Happiness, and it's about spreading happiness and just positive, like, you know, mental health awareness. And so I feel like it's a cool serendipity, I guess, to see that, especially about mental health awareness. So thank you for what you're doing. That's really cool, Josh. I don't know. I feel like that's kind of like a want answer, kind of like a back break as a finisher, but I feel like, I don't know. It's like a lot of pressure.
There's so many. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm so, I love your question. And I feel like it's truly the essence of, why people, so many people are so loyal and loving to wrestling because of like the, you know, the amazing wrestling and amazing acrobatics and amazing performances and athleticism, but like what some characters truly capture, like just the so much love and passion and emotion and have the ability to connect so deeply with fans. And I can look back now and see and say like, oh my gosh, I get it on such a deeper level now, way more than I could have, you know, 10 years ago when I was in the ranks. That was always so in my head. But now just with experience and age and just like going through so much different experiences in life, I realize like that's really where the heart of wrestling is, in those moments that are so unbelievably passionate. And like maybe it's about a feud or, you know, a fictional character, but the emotion and the energy that comes through in those passionate moments and promos, I feel like it's like the ability to connect so, so deeply with fans. So I respect that so, so much. And I think it's cool to bring awareness to how much passion there is in pro wrestling, because I think sometimes that gets overlooked. Like it's, you know, silly or like gaga or whatever, but like, yeah, I love wrestling. I love wrestling for the art form that it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like I see the Dolph Ziggler one thrown around a lot, like just comes up on social media because it goes to a lot of things when he was trying to, I think it was the Intercontinental Championship, but he's like, sometimes the things you love just don't love you back. And you're right. It goes far, it transcends.
Yes. Wrestling. Yeah. And he's incredibly talented too, like very, very deeply talented person and cares so deeply for the art and the sport. So yeah, absolutely.
Got it. Strawberry soda, thank you. Memories of Audrey Marie and Christina Crawford.
Oh my god, that's a amazing. Audrey Marie, she was kind of like my after. When was it? After a lot of things changed, and we had all gone on the road, like the girls that were on season 3 of NXT, and then that once that season was over, everybody kind of went in their own ways, and some like. AJ, I think, was on the road for a couple things. And so when I wasn't, I really had a chance to hang out with Audrey. And she kind of ended up being my, like, one friend. Like, we, you know, we went to the beach a couple times and stuff. She was really dope. I enjoyed her. And I recently, actually, in the past, like, few years, I've tried to figure out how to contact her because she was amazing. And Christina Crawford, the only memory I truly have with her, like, you know, I wrestled, like, a couple six woman tags with her at FCW and a couple of, you know, tag matches and stuff, but we weren't really super tight. I remember the one memory I had with her is we were riding together to one of the house shows in Florida. It was like Meyerland, or it's not Meyerland, whatever part of Florida was. It was like 3 hours away, and we were riding together, and we got a flat tire, and we had to call Dr. Tom and like explain what was happening. And he like, I felt like he didn't believe us. He was like, "What are you guys doing?" But I was with her for that, and I was like, "Oh God!" But we had some like adventures in FCW like that together. But yeah, I didn't really have too much of a chance to connect with Christina, because she was the other one that was there with me when everybody else was going up on the road for NXT. So I ended up getting joined to that last minute. She was at FCW, so I didn't spend a ton of time with her.
She had never made it to the main roster, right, Christina?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't quite remember, but I don't remember her being up in the main roster, no.
Oh, okay.
Sean, thank you. Time zone excuse. Celeste, James, next question.
such a rookie mistake with the time zone. Such a rookie mistake.
Right.
Were they still finding people if you were late when you were there?
Yeah. I think so. But I was never like fined or anything, but I know they would like throw it around. They were so active, like they would say that, you know, you'll get a fine if you're late. I was never fined, and I didn't know anybody that was, but they did say that they would.
Yeah,
so I think so.
Yeah, I started implementing that when I was there, with $500 fine if you were late.
Yeah, I remember it was that. Yeah, I never knew anybody that got fined.
Did y'all still have to follow a dress code as well?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
$500 fine if you got a dress code.
Yeah, I know, bringing back all the memories. Yeah, I remember that. I remember when the first flight that I took out to the first loop that they were doing NXT, they're like, you have to wear biz cash on the plane. And even on the plane, no matter what you're doing, you got to represent yourself, got to represent the company. And I took it so seriously, and I was like freaking out about what I was wearing. You know, it's just like everything seems scary. But eventually, like, you know, it gets easier. But yeah, there was definitely a dress code. I forgot about that.
I never understood why they didn't make like team jumpsuits, like warm up suits with WWE logo on it, right?
Yeah, it would really like solve, you know, any issue with someone like not looking like they represent the company, you know. But yeah, that's it. Matching tracksuits.
I sweat a lot. So I remember when we traveled down south, especially like in the Carolinas, Texas area. One time I sweated so much, I had this huge sweat stain on my legs and like my ass. It looked like I pissed myself. Yeah, it was great. Anyway, next question.
You're like, yeah, that's your relationship with BizCash, having to wear it all the time. It was very hot. It was very hot sometimes. Yeah, I feel that.
Rex, thank you. Great fan of the channel, Rex. Caitlin, what's your view on Melina as a talent when it came to backstage? Who was women's locker room leader?
I love, so amazing question. I love Melina. I didn't get to ever really work with her aside from big group stuff, like, you know, battle royals and big tags and stuff. But I always really admired her, her artistry. Like, I think she's a great artist and incredibly talented. I wasn't super close with her. I didn't have a tight relationship with her. But you know, when I was there, especially in the main locker room, Beth, I would say, you know, Beth was always a leader. Eve was always a leader. And then, you know, when it was kind of the new era, and AJ was really great a lot of time. I feel like our kind of era, our generation, it was myself, like Oksana, Naomi, AJ. We experienced a lot of things that didn't feel good to us, like when we first got on the road, and then we had the ability to take like just like the guidance and the leadership from the ones that were willing to do that for us. And I think we really chose to embody that in a different way and not treat the talent coming in a negative way, because we were part of that really cool transitional time where we were just really starting to get more. We were giving ourselves more permission because we were taking more risks, and we were just doing cool shit, more cool shit, you know? And so I think that we never really talked about it directly, but we all kind of carried that as like a certain type of integrity. So when it was our time to be the people that were there, you know, the women that were there the longest, and there was new women coming in, we were always like really fair and I think allowed ourselves to see the bigger picture and say, you know, like my husband says, a rising tide raises all ships. So when one of us does amazing, you know, it's an opportunity for all of us to start stepping into that possibility. So it was like that. There was all, of course, there was moments that felt catty and shitty and where, you know, ego got in the way and stuff. But we had experienced a lot of that when we came in, like kind of the Lay Cool era, just kind of just the culture of it. It just didn't feel good. It kind of sucked. We were like, we're not going to treat the other women like that to the best of our abilities. And we also had some really amazing women coming up at that time. It was like Charlotte and Paige and, you know, women that had a lot of integrity and a lot of talent and, you know, confidence and belief in themselves. So it was just like a cool time. It was a cool time when I was there.
Your last name, is it pronounced Bona?
Yes. Yes, it is. No one
Est-ce
ever knows that.
que tu parles français, non?
I took it. No. I took it. My father's side of the family's Cajun, so I was around that a little bit. But I took French. Yeah, I took French in high school. I don't really remember any of it. But yeah, my last name is that. You nailed it. Yeah, no one ever really knows. I usually settle. I just say Bonin because it's like it's you know it's a big thing to explain. And I for a long time I didn't know how to like own that and just be like no it's Bonin. But yeah, it's cool when you say it like that, right?
Well, I'm French, so
You're like, I get it. Yeah.
yeah. Next question.
Yes, Bosch Nagata, thank you. People came from across the world to train with Vern Gagne in a barn here in central Minnesota in minus 50 degree weather. They'll come to train with you, Renee. And hi, Celeste. What's your earliest wrestling memory?
That's
Were
a
you a
cool
fan
message.
growing up, or?
Me? Was I a fan?
Yes.
Man, I probably watched a handful of hours of wrestling like with my brother. I loved watching like Vader, you know, and Goldberg and stuff, but I wasn't super into wrestling. I wasn't at all, but I was really drawn to it probably like a year or two before I had the opportunity to try out for it because I saw it as like an art form or something that I felt like expressed me in a fuller way because I you know I was doing like fitness competitions and you know, I was getting to get up there on stage and you know, put a lot of like time, energy, love, effort into, you know, my body and the sport. But I never really, I was just like looking for a feeling, you know, and I was like, well, wrestling is so much more dynamic and I felt like I had a lot to me. So I just was like, I could do that. Like I could definitely do that. And then when I did have the opportunity to try out, my friend came with me and she's like this unbelievable like Amazon woman. She's so, you know, she's so gorgeous and she's you know, she does fitness competitions and she was there for like a day and a half and she was like, I hate this. I'm gonna go home. This is not for me. And I was like, really? Like I love it. And I felt like I was like, I finally felt something that I really wanted to go after. But I was still putting this emphasis on it, like maybe it's gonna give me that feeling that I was trying to get through like bodybuilding and did never get. So I was still chasing, you know, to fulfill something in myself through wrestling. And I did learn that. But you know, wrestling has infinitely refined me and shaped me in so many ways. You know, my earliest memories of wrestling are literally like Vader's face mask and just like what you know, he just. So I don't have a ton of like. That's why I really struggled a lot in NXT with my confidence because I felt. Like I just didn't know anything about wrestling. I just didn't know anything about wrestling, and I was so insecure about it. And I was so kind of locked up with feeling like, how can I wear the right thing? How can I, you know, appear? How can I be more confident? How can I be more of a diva? And I never really knew how to take that time to really study wrestling. I was just always so much in my head. And so I always let that just be a really big insecurity for me and be a reason why like I didn't deserve to be there, I didn't fit in or whatever. And I just would let it get to my head a lot. So I definitely looked at that as like a big weakness of mine for a long time because I felt, you know, like everybody was either like a veteran or knew so much about wrestling or they were like lifelong fans and they had like worked their whole life to get there. And I was like, well, who am I? You know, and just feeling this feeling of like I shouldn't be here and stuff. And I did let that hold me down a lot in the way that I saw myself and the way that I allowed myself to show up. And I think like the love, care, and intention that I now would have put into understanding and learning wrestling more, like the rich history of it and more about the psychology of it, which I eventually learned from wrestling, you know, at least the performance aspects of it. But yeah, it's cool to like answer this question this way, because I've never really said that out loud, that like I always let that be such a huge insecurity for me that I was just like, I didn't watch wrestling as a kid. I wasn't really into it, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. We've got Laser. Thank you, Caitlin. I'm a huge fan. Any NYC stories?
Could they Dude. Be...
Oh, yeah.
No. I was going to say thank you so much just for the love and support. I was so excited to go back to Mae Young. It was the first time I had got really – it was, I guess it was 4 years after I left. I left WWE in 2014. And then when I went back to do the Mae Young Classic was in 2018. And I was super excited to go back because I had just started kind of getting back into the ring a few months before. I had gone through like a really bad divorce, and I was really like struggling and battling with alcoholism and drugs and stuff, and just really in a bad place in my life. And so I was like, you know, just trying to find something that helped me feel different. And so I started getting back in the ring again, and I was like really out of shape, and just like, you know, just I had in, like gone through so many things emotionally and mentally that I was just like in such a bad place. And it really helped me find something again, just like making myself accountable to show up, to get in the ring and to show up and like, and just put myself out there. And so because of that, I think I was just kind of like putting that, I was posting something about it. And then my buddy, Canyon Seaman, I don't think he's with the company anymore, but Canyon and I became friends over the years. They had brought him on, you know, to develop like the talent portion and like acquiring talent and that whole process. And he and I talked a lot because he knew my process, how I had gotten, you know, on the road really fast without having experience and just kind of feeling really lost. And so we talked a lot, and he was just, cause he was really trying to refine the process and everything that the Performance Center is now, like I attribute so much to him and like his ideas and his like perceptions of like how we can change it. Like, guys, this is like a $1 billion company. Like the process of bringing in talent should be different. It can be different. And so I just like had a lot of respect for him, and we had such a great friendship. And so he reached out to me, and he's like, hey, you know, he's like, I brought your name up for the Mae Young. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yes. And I jumped on saying yes so fast because I felt like I had really gained something back into my life by just like getting back in the ring for a few months. And so it felt really awesome. And then I got to wrestle Mia Yim, who I have so much love and respect for. And she was, you know, I had a clothing company. I started a clothing company after I left WWE in 2014. And Mia would buy, she was like a huge loyal customer. She would buy my stuff all the time. She would rep it. She would tag it. And I appreciated that so much. And because I really struggled with, you know, shifting, you know, wrestling and then trying to be an entrepreneur and just really not knowing shit about anything and just really not believing in myself a lot. But I loved her so much because of what I think she reflected to me. And I always thought she was so talented. So when I got to have a match with her, I was so excited, and I was really nervous because I hadn't wrestled in so long besides just, you know, a couple matches and practice matches and stuff. And we had such an amazing match. Like, it was a dream to work with her. She's so smooth, so talented, such a athlete, like amazing mindset, great vision. And when I got out of the ring with her, like I went to the second round. She was my second match in the Mae Young. And so I knew I was like eliminated and she was going on. And I was like so happy. Like I was in tears because I had felt like when I left WWE, I was like in such a bad place. I remember the day that I asked for my release. I was just like, it was like a day, and I was just like, this is a sign, you know? And they told me to sleep on it. And the next day I think we were like in Philly or something. They gave me like a match on that show. It was like that show main event that they had. I don't know if they still have it with AJ. And it was just like a shitty match. You know, I was like in such a bad place. My stomach was so fucked up. I had like so much stress, and I was like, I didn't know if I was making the right decision. And I was like really emotional. And I kind of was hated that was my last match, even though it was with AJ, but like we were in kind of a weird place. And so when I like got out of the ring after that match with Mia, I was like, I'm so good if this is my last match with WWE. Like, I feel good about it now. You know, like, it's like I got to come back and redeem myself in a different way, but not for anybody else, like for me, you know? And it was cool because Beth was announcing, Renee Young was announcing, and Michael Cole was announcing, or not announcing, they were on commentary. And I love Beth. I'll always love Beth. She's an incredible human being, like in the ring, outside the ring. And Renee, amazing, amazing, amazing person. And
Thanks.
Renee, just I guess if your name is Renee, you're just like you're dope. But her and I always really connected a lot, and I had a lot of respect for her. And then Michael Cole, it was cool because Michael Cole was on commentary for season three of NXT, the all women season, and like he fucked with us like relentlessly, and like we were all like, everybody knew that's just like you're on a reality show trying to get your spot on TV and stuff, and we were all so nervous and scared all the time, and we were rookies, and so sorry, I had a bunch of messages coming in. So, oh yeah, I forgot where I was at. Geez, sorry about that. Oh, with Michael Cole, and I still had a chance. Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with the three of them before my matches at Mae Young, and I was like, guys, this is so cool. It's so cool. It was awesome. And then I was like, yo, Michael Cole, I am so excited to be able to like have you call my match, because like I think for a long time we all kind of resented him because he was just like this. He's a heel, but we all felt like we got shit on so much, and I think everybody feels like that in so many different ways. But just some of the things that they would say on commentary when we would listen back, we'd be like, "That's fucked up," like just the shit like didn't feel good. And I know for a long time, I let things get under my skin, like because I was so self-conscious and so unconfident for a long time in my ability in the ring and just in my ability to be there and if I was deserving of it or not. And so we had like such a dope conversation. He was like, I'm so excited to call the match. Like it was just like everything. I was just like, yes, and then after the match, like when Mia won, Hunter came out on the the little Full Sail stage and signed her and gave her a contract. And I was like, that is
Wow.
fucking, that is dope. Yeah, that was like the highlight of so many things for me because it was like such a redemption for me. And to be able to pay it forward to her, who I like really respected for so many reasons, but like mainly for like really reflecting to me the worth that I felt like I couldn't see in myself when I was trying to, succeed in my business. So it was like it was very powerful for me.
You still own that business, yeah?
So 2 years ago, I closed that, and I have a coaching business now with my husband. But I had it for 7 years, and it was really fun. It was awesome. I got to do a lot of really cool stuff and develop a lot of like my ability as like a creator, like digitally and stuff. So and my ability to, like leadership qualities and stuff that I feel like I embody now that I learned through having my own business and having employees and being in charge of everything. So I'm glad to not have it anymore because it was custom clothing, that it was difficult, just like any venture. But I'm glad to have had it be what it was, and then to have laid it to rest.
Okay.
That's awesome. Victor Spell, thank you. Caitlin, your badassness is the size of Texas. Was there anyone in the WWE locker room you didn't get along with or just didn't understand?
Thank you for your badassness compliment. That is, I take that to heart. Thank you. Yeah, there was definitely, I struggled. I butted heads a lot, or I didn't butt heads. I struggled a lot just with feeling like I could even talk to a few groups of women. Like, when I first came up and I got the spot on SmackDown, Lay Cool were like, they were everything. Layla and Michelle McCool. And, that was super tough. Like I and Barbie was there, and she was always really sweet to me, but it was just weird. Like I just and I it was like my own constructs, of my belief in myself and whether I, should be there or not. But so I struggled to connect with a lot of them that were there before me. But I think Layla and I had a difficult time kind of seeing eye to eye. And what's cool is in like these later years, I've seen her at different shows. I would come in for like WrestleCon and stuff and just different trade shows. And the guy that I was doing a bunch of shows with, he started bringing Layla in. So there's a couple that we were at together, and it was like the first time that we talked in, since I left. And then I know she left after, I don't even remember how it happened, but we connected, and we like, we exchanged numbers, and we just like kind of, well, shit was like water under the bridge because, thinking about that stuff, we were just like in to two totally different spots in our lives, both like really needing and wanting our careers to be something for ourselves individually, you know, and really like understanding that and seeing that in each other, especially now. And so I don't have any like bad blood with anybody. Actually, I have so much love and respect for everybody, but there was absolutely really difficult times when they were kind of the leaders of the locker room. There were things that I don't think I necessarily agreed with as far as like what I considered leadership. But again, I wasn't the leader of my own life. And, you know, the things that I do now, like I am, like that I am now, that just nobody is, you know, it was 10, 13 years ago. So I think it'd be really dope to have a reunion. I've had a couple, you know, I've gone to like raw reunions and stuff, but yeah. So I didn't really have anything too tough, but I would say that Layla and I, we were the most at odds, and now we've kind of laid that all to rest, and it's dope.
Awesome. Was that like out of jealousy or competitive? What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think that part of it was just like the walls that I had up, and I'm sure everybody had walls up, but I can really only like own and acknowledge my own. So I think there was probably a lot of moments for connection that I didn't necessarily understand or see or felt like maybe guarded against. But I never had like, in my own experience, to me, like I never had a shitty attitude, but I think that a lot of the ways that I kind of kept to myself could have really shown that to others, or it could have been perceived as that. So I look back and see now, like a lot of my ways of interacting were not really like developed, you know, like I didn't really know how to relate a lot, especially with the women in the locker room. So I think now, like I could look back and be like, man, I see how that kind of built between like how I saw myself and how I saw everybody, and maybe how my actions like encouraged that, and maybe how I reacted to certain things or read her behavior too. So I don't really know. I have no idea, but I could say that like, I know for me, I've always like, I was like, there was a threat that I like wouldn't be relevant, or, you know, not on TV or not in stories. And that was always like really scary for everybody. So I think that really put people on edge as far as like, if you weren't booked for a while, and it would make you think shitty thoughts about yourself, and you know, that would start to reflect in your attitude. And that happened all the time, you know, that still happens. And it sucks to see, because, you know, the second that you start believing that you're not shit, like that's the only thoughts that you have, you know, and then it starts to affect the way the locker room feels. It starts to affect the way your matches feel. And so it's just like a really big downward spiral. So, you know, there's been a couple times I've gone back to, you know, when bra or something is in town, or it's like a cool thing that I get invited back to. The things of course change, but there's still a lot of time that sense of like lack of confidence and in certain people, and it spreads, and then it becomes kind of like an overall mood of the people backstage, and I hate that because it becomes so contagious. But then I didn't know how to understand that or combat that.
I'd like to apologize to everyone. I've been awake since 2:30 this morning. My wife flew home to Japan today. Oh, sorry. Hello, Celeste.
Hello, yeah, Celeste.
I had to drive her all the way to the airport. We had to drive back because she forgot something. And
oh no!
Yeah,
she made the flight though, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Good, good.
That's what I'm texting now. She's got the Wi-Fi, and I guess a little kid's been kicking the back of her seat the whole time.
The worst, absolute worst.
You're all set for the SmackDown watch along, Renee. That's
gonna oh, keep Jesus. You awake. I might make a run to get some Red Bull.
Celeste, any memories of your time in NXT 2011, 2012 with Fandango, EC3, Maxine, Striker? I really like the soap opera styled backstage segments. I feel like I remember those from my childhood. Yeah. Vaguely. Yeah.
That was some of my favorite stuff. That was some of my absolute favorite stuff. Because it was like, after NXT stopped being like a reality show, I think there was like one more. It was season 3, which was us, the women. And there was like one more season, maybe. It was like 4 seasons. I don't remember. Maybe 2. But then it stopped being a reality, like an elimination show. And it was just a show. And so it was kind of like really always went under the radar. Like it kind of felt like nobody super cared that much about it. Like we didn't really feel like that many people backstage or like the producers, anybody was really like paying attention to it. So we were just like trying stuff, you know, We were all just kind of like, you know, let's just do some fun stuff. And we're just pitching all these crazy ideas and like having so much fun with it and just like doing weird shit. Remember, like, yeah, Johnny Curtis, like his whole, you know, creepy, but it was so him, you know, and Bateman and Maxine. Oh my God. So yeah, it was the best, actually. It was the best. And we had Tom Casillo as our writer, and he was like just kind of climbing the ranks, you know. Eventually he became head writer. But you know, we started at NXT with him. And so it was like so dope because we're all just like, no one's like really paying that much attention. So like let's just have so much fun. And like it was the best. It was the best. We would just at a certain point, we're just kind of seeing like what we could get away with. Like we're like, you think Michael Hayes is watching today? You know, like, it was just so fun. It was so fun.
That's awesome, especially when you saw what Fandango like went on to do also, like with the all that type of stuff, like he just kept, yeah, so that's cool that it was like an outlet early on for
Yes.
all of them.
Yeah, exactly. It was like a super creative outlet. I think it helped all of us so much with kind of the stuckness that we're feeling. We're like, where do we fit in? Like what, you know, who are we? What are we doing? And we all kind of had each other in that group. So it was cool. It was really dope.
Basically the same. Any Maxine Bateman and Fandango stories? Anything specific from filming those?
So I got, when I tried out, I asked Bateman to be in my promo because I had like observed him
Cool.
because he was in FCW still. And I had made friends with him and I had observed like that he was like, I loved his sense of humor and kind of what he was doing. And I had written this like really ridiculous, it was like a satire on like an SNL character skit. And I like asked him to be in it and he was like, cool, whatever. And it was so dope. And so we were kind of friends like really early on. And then, so that was fun. And then Kurt and I, Johnny Curtis, we lived in the same apartment building and like, we would like sometimes watch each other's dogs and stuff. And then Maxine, I was never super close with. She was kind of like, but it was like her gimmick. Like I felt like she really just like lived her gimmick. She was just kind of like sassy and kind of just like mysterious. But it was kind of like really fun to have her as that all the time. And so I remember just like I think I can't remember what arena we were in, but there was like a weird like closet scene that we were trying to get. Like a approval on. It was like something super. It was when Johnny Curtis was getting super weird. It was like the really, really weird, like super creepy stuff. But I don't remember anything. I actually don't really remember anything super specific. I think I wrestled Maxine a couple times. I wrestled her one time in Mexico City, and it was like we actually had a pretty cool match. But I also one of my Maxine matches was voted the worst match on the internet, and it was like during NXT. Yeah, it was when I was on NXT, and I had literally wrestled maybe like four times in my life, and we had a match, and so she had more experience than I did, but you know, I was like I had no awareness, no body awareness, no ring awareness, and it was difficult to connect with her in a lot of ways. I did, like I said, like I we didn't have that kind of connection. I felt like I didn't know how to form that with her, and she was like super mysterious, but. Yeah, we had like the worst match on the internet. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I had so many like really like funny, embarrassing moments on NXT because I was just like, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know? And I just kind of owned it and like really was just like kind of the attitude of like I have nothing to lose. But I did. There was like a lot of times where I was like, God, you know, really embarrassing things that you look back on and you're like, oh my God, you know? I had so many of those.
let's see. Super Mario. Caitlin, how do you feel about almost being in the Divas of Doom with Beth and Natty? That's cool.
Yeah, amazing question. I forget about cool stuff like that. We had gear made, matching gear. Like it was cool. We had it was like the coolest thing that never happened. But it gave me a lot of confidence getting to sit and kind of like workshop with Beth and Natty. And there was actually a lot of times where AJ and I were kind of forming ourselves as a tag team, and we were getting to do matches against Beth and Natty, and we were just like getting just squashed so hard on you know, getting like these double electric chairs and like crazy shit from Beth and Natty, but like we loved it because we were like, this is so cool, you know, we're getting two time and they're legends, and like they you know, they had taught us so much. And
Who's
then
legends? Excuse me.
well, you're and all Renee's. And so it was cool to get to work with him, but you know, we were just like getting our asses kicked. And then so when the kind of the idea of Divas of Doom came around, I was like really excited because I saw myself a little bit like them. You know, it was for like physical stature and attitude and stuff. And so it was fun to be able to workshop with them and feel like I was kind of in on that idea and that concept, and to have, you know, this gear that I never got to wear, but to have the gear made that matched theirs and stuff. It was dope, but I wish it was something that came to fruition, but you know, everything, I remember being kind of sad about it, but you know, everything kind of just happens the way it's supposed to, I guess. But that's an amazing question.
It was, yeah.
So now, do you still like take indie bookings, or do you?
No, I was doing a little bit of, when I was living in Florida and I had gotten back in the ring for a little bit, and I had done the Mae Young, I was going to this one school in Fort Lauderdale, and then I started going to Gangrel School. It was fun. Like, I just loved it. Yeah. One of my friends who actually I met through my ex-husband's company, she was like, she worked for him and she was like a huge wrestling fan, and we like really connected. And so she was wrestling at Gangrel School, and I had gone over there for like a couple of practices and stuff. So I did a few matches for them, and that was fun. I love Gangrel. I love him. I love him. I love being at his school. I love the way that he taught his students. He always treated me with like a lot of love and respect, and I really enjoyed being there, but I didn't take any like random, indie things, just stuff that I was kind of like, just, you know, becoming a part of just cause it felt good. But I was doing, you know, I'll do signings and stuff, but I was never wanting to get back in the ring when I first left. I just was like, just had such a weird relationship with wrestling at that time, and didn't really know how to process it. So I was like, I'm not interested in wrestling. And then getting back in the ring, that was like really amazing for me, but I just never really felt interested in doing indie stuff. You know, I had my own business, and I was really trying to make that work. I was like, just trying to make anything work, essentially. But I feel like what I had experienced with WWE, again, I just like had such a weird relationship with wrestling for a long time that I just didn't have the interest in it.
Oh, so you got to the point where you just hated wrestling?
Yeah. And it wasn't even, like, I feel like I didn't even hate it. I felt like I didn't know how to like understand. Hold on, my AirPods are dying.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we hate it.
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily hate it. I just felt like I was like, I don't know what it is to me, you know? And when I left, I was just in a weird place, and I was like, I suck, and you know, I don't really know what I'm meant to do, and just, you know, in a place like that, kind of just really lost. So yeah, I really think I changed the way that I was feeling about it through just like, you know, talking about it with my husband, like things that would come, he would ask me questions about wrestling all the time, or just things that he's like, hey, do you think about, you know, just questions that were interesting. And I'm like, you know, I guess I never thought about it like that. And I would like kind of look at it a different way and be like, okay, you know. And then when I went back for Mae Young, it just felt different. And I feel like I had shifted my relationship so much with wrestling to where I felt like I wanted, if there was like a match I wanted to watch, or I felt like I could appreciate it in a different way because I didn't have so much like negativity locked in with myself and the way that I ended my career and just the way how everything went for me, or the way that I had so many like emotional ties to the negative emotional ties to it. So now, like, you know, if one of my friends has an important match where they're like, I know what they're doing or I can attend, I'll always love to go because I feel like I have a different respect and love for wrestling now.
So you mentioned you struggle with substance abuse. Did that happen while you were still with the company or post WWE?
No, I like literally never even like drank when I was wrestling. I just was very, I wasn't interested in it. I was just, I would never like go out or party or anything. I was like always back in my hotel room. And not even in a way of like, I was so dedicated. I just was like, just, I think just socially in just a weird place, you know, and really trying to understand how to be there and just how to be better and whatever. And again, like I never really got connected with too many people or had those kind of friendships. So when I got married like 6 months after I left the company, and I was only engaged for like less than a year, and this is to my ex-husband. And so we just had, he had a supplement business and he was like making a ton of money. And I was starting, you know, I started my clothing business and we just kind of had this like crazy lifestyle. We were both at like really weird points in our lives where we were both kind of just like two individuals and pain, you know, and just looking, you know, we just kind of meshed and bonded on that. And it was like very difficult from the very beginning. And so it was just something like that, like where I had never really dealt with anything in my life. You know, anything that had really affected me or was traumatic or whatever before I started wrestling. And then I think all of those things were really magnified for me when I was there and kind of in the spotlight and not really knowing how to handle myself. And then leaving and not really having, formulation of like what any of it was and where, you know, how to process leaving there. And for a long time, I felt like I had this like cloud over me that I felt like it would just say like that I would never do anything greater than that. Like I would never amount to anything more than, you know, my career with WWE. And so I just, I was struggling a lot internally. And I think I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't really know how to, you know, cope with it. And so I started going to therapy. And like, when I first started, you know, I just was like, I know I was like, I feel like I'm the problem. I had this like really tumultuous experience with my wrestling career and then just left really abruptly and was just like, I'm gonna start a business. And you know, I was like running from a lot of things and I was just running. And so it kind of really came to my, and it came to a head in my marriage. And you know, my ex-husband, we were not good for each other at all. And we didn't know how to communicate. And we were just, it just was a really bad cocktail of things. And you know, we both were drinking a lot. And it was just, we just didn't know how to cope with everything that felt wrong in our relationship. And yeah, so it was really difficult. And then when we ended up, we were married for like not even 3 years. And that was like, that divorce ended in 2017. And then I was on my own and I was trying to make my business work. And I was like, this is my only thing to like show the world that I'm anything, you know? So I was like putting so much pressure on myself to make, you know, my business successful and just so many unprocessed like emotions and like a lot of, I think like, you know, self-hatred and negative thoughts about myself that I just didn't know how to deal with it. So I was just like numbing myself, you know, with drinking a lot and I was living by myself. So, you know, it's really easy to form a habit when you don't, you know, I wasn't like hiding it from anybody. But then it just like got to the point of just like, you know, drinking during the day and just like finding different things to cope with and stuff. And I went through like a medical detox a couple of times, but I never actually did like the rehab part. So because I was not at that the point yet, I was at a point of like, oh, I know I'm having an issue with addiction, with a substance, but I didn't have the ability to say, oh, I'm having an emotional problem. I'm having a problem within me. And that's why I'm doing these things. Like I wasn't able to look at that. So when I would get out of like doing a medical detox of whatever, you know, I was like physically addicted to, you know, alcohol, whenever I would get done with one of those, I would never do any of the work to kind of heal the wounds that I had. And I would slowly, you know, start drinking again or start doing something, you know, to cope with like just the pain that I was feeling and the unprocessed things. And so, I struggled a lot with that and I had a lot of shame about it. And I had a lot of shame about like just how my marriage and my divorce went and just how I was handling myself up until that point in my life. So yeah, it was like, and that was kind of leading into like a really like rock bottom place for me, which was in 2018, where I was just like, I felt like I was just, you know, creating this like huge path of chaos in my life, just hurting, you know, when you're in pain, it's not really prevalent to you how other people are feeling. Like you're just, you're in such a bad place that you don't necessarily realize how your actions affect other people. And I feel like I was, you know, treating my family in certain ways and not understanding things that were really painful to me early on and not really knowing how to process difficult things, in my personal life. And so, yeah, it was really hard, but, I met my husband at a mastermind at the end of 2018, and we ended up, my husband Grant, and we started dating like a few months after we met at this mastermind in Arizona. And when, you know, I was like such a mess, and when I met him, it was like kind of the first thing in my face that like showed me that there were so many things I needed to change, you know, and I needed to start like looking at myself and loving myself and stuff. So that was like a huge catalyst for me. And I never really consider myself like an addict or like, you know, oh, I, because you know, I'll have a beer now. I'll do, you know, I smoke weed, you know, but I don't look at myself as like someone who's like addicted or dependent on substances. I just look at myself as someone who like didn't know how to like be with themselves, something that didn't know how to process my emotions and like the things that I was feeling and going through in my life. And so the past 5 years has been, you know, like really transformational process of kind of uncovering a lot of those things and just finding out what's underneath, you know, all these things that I've kind of run from for so long. And yeah, so it's been a really cool transformational 5 years. And it was awesome that the Mae Young Classic that I did landed right, you know, at kind of the end of 2018. Also, it was like coming out of this like really, really dark place in my life. So it's like special to me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're all cleaned up and in a good place, remarried. That's great. That's great to hear. Are we caught up or no? Okay.
We're not quite caught up, no.
The bladders again. I got to go. I'll be right back.
What are your thoughts on AJ Lee and CM Punk?
I think they're made for each other. I think they're absolutely made for each other. I had the privilege of getting to know AJ, you know, so intimately and so privately. We traveled together for a long time and just, we went through so many things together and, you know, it was a crazy ride. So whenever, you know, they first started dating and I remember how much, I remember seeing something in her that I didn't really get to see a lot, you know? And so I felt really happy for her that she had found him and same for him. And I, you know, I think they're both really extremely talented people, very, very, just so good. So brilliant. And, you know, also like, I think jaded in certain ways, it makes them, you know, really just so good at what they do. And they own it in their own special ways. So I have so much love for them. And I got to, reconnect with AJ a few times, over the years and a couple times in Chicago actually. And I got to go to one of Phil's fights. And it was just so cool to see him like putting himself out there and just like doing something different. It just required so much guts and so much like will to try something so different. I have so much respect for them.
Yeah, definitely. Really cool to hear that you only became friends when you got to WWE. I think you said, because like from what I saw on screen, it looked like there was so much chemistry, like dating back, like that you knew each other beforehand. Even speaks to how good of friends, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. Yeah, we have such a bond, and like I really do. It's cool because like, you know, we kind of grew up in a way together through wrestling. You know, through that time that really like she did so many insane things. She did so many insane things on TV. And like being able to like be next to her and then also just watch her as, you know, just like a fan of hers and just like being so appreciative of, you know, what she helped me with and what she showed me and taught me and like how much she was there for me. It's so cool. It was so cool to see that and watch her do so, like she did so much amazing stuff.
It's very cool. Yeah. Joe Wrestling, thank you. Any funny stories when you were in WWE NXT?
So many. yeah, man. It's like, it's so hard to think of specific ones, but I think like the funniest stuff ended up being when, you know, they would like mess with us, you know? So we would generally know the card. We would know what the structure of the show would be. And we would know who had matches. So we'd be able to have an agent and a producer and stuff for them. But sometimes they would just like leave us in the dark for segments, or they would say it was one thing and then they would like surprise us on TV and it would be like something different. Wow. So it was always like, so the first day, I think it was like one of the first or second shows that we did, the first or second episodes, it was, I think it was like a dancing contest or something, but like, so they would just tell us we were doing one thing and they'd be like, surprise, it's this. And just, we'd be like, oh God. So there was like a lot of that stuff. And so we all really like bonded over that stuff. And then there were so many times where, you know, we were like the rookies. And so we didn't go in the women's locker room. We were like in our own little, you know, usually it was like a closet under a shelf. And so we always like really like bonded and appreciated those moments. Cause we were like, we're going to look back at these things and just laugh. Like, I remember the first time. So I had Vicky Guerrero as my pro on NXT. So I was the rookie, she was my pro. And she was so amazing to work with, so amazing to work with. And I remember because, like, her whole relationship with Dolph on TV, they had pulled Dolph into NXT. And, there was like the whole story. Dolph and I had a brief storyline where, we were like making out in a booth or something, and Vicky caught us. And it was, and so I got to be on a pay-per-view, my first pay-per-view ever, when I was on NXT. And because I wasn't, like, high enough on the totem pole yet, I had to wait till a very specific time to get my makeup done. And they would only do a little bit, and then I would have to, like, finish it. And then nobody would do my hair. Like, I didn't have, like, there was all the women who were in front of me. So the locker room we were in didn't have, for the NXT women, didn't have mirrors or outlets. And so I was in the, so you know how they would put, like, every arena is different. So the producers are always in a different room. It just depends on the arena. So it was like the production office. I knocked on their door, and it was like in a big locker room. And I was like, guys, can I use, like, your mirror? And so they were in the bathroom, but there was no mirrors. And so I was had to curl my hair for this pay-per-view. So I was using the reflection of a paper towel dispenser to curl my hair for this pay-per-view, my first pay-per-view ever. And so there was just, like, so many moments like that where it was just funny. It's just like there's so many things that you never expect when you think about, like, being a part of WWE or being on the road and stuff. And then you just experience them, and you're like, it's funny. And so there was, like, so many moments like that where we actually, like, all really bonded so closely over, like, these silly little things, these silly little moments. But yeah, that was, like, one of the most notable things. Just being like, guys, can I get ready in here? It was fun.
Dante, thank you. Besides TV, did you and AJ work any house shows often?
Yeah, we had a good share of house shows. It was we so when I had the title, I ended up losing the title to her on a pay-per-view match, and then we had a more of a feud after that, and led to, like, another pay-per-view. So we had a cool little run, and so we got to do a lot of cool stuff on pay-per-views. And I think we did some overseas tours where we had a lot of singles matches. And I would say, besides my title run with Eve, I would say that, and then my run with AJ was the time where I, like, evolved the most in the ring, because I had, like, consistent work with the same person, and we built trust. And, like, I learned, and AJ and I always worked so good together, because I was like, she was so tiny and she was so good, and we just had a great connection. And so we just trusted each other with stuff. We would trust each other with, like, weird ideas and, like, oh, whatever, let's just try this. And then we would, like, fuck with other wrestlers and stuff. It was fun. We had so much fun. And then there was a time where we were traveling with Big E too. And those were probably
Wow.
the best of the travel days, for sure.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Strawberry soda, thank you. Memories of your match with Summerlee in Dallas.
Man, I don't remember. I'm like, did I hit my head on that? I don't really remember much of that, honestly. I do remember working with Summer, and I loved it. She was always a lot of fun. She was super athletic. She always had a good attitude, and she just worked it. It was cool to be in the ring with her, but I don't actually remember that match specifically. I'm sorry. I'm sure it was a lot of fun though.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. Like, I know, I correct me if I'm wrong or you disagree, but it's like when you're on the road every week, it's just like Groundhog Day, right?
Yeah.
People ask you, do you remember this? I'm like, no, I
No.
don't.
Yeah. It's hard to, like, remember what city you're in,
Yeah.
Like, I started remembering cities by the way the arenas looked on the inside. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this last time.
I remember going to the airport and then, checking my bag and like the lady, oh, where are you traveling today? I'd be like, I was hoping you could tell me
Yeah, you're like, let me check
that.
my
Yeah.
email. You always get strange looks when you don't know where you're traveling to from the
Right.
people at the airport.
We're gonna 5 more minutes because me and Jonah have to do a watch along on Patreon, so.
We got to swap over. Here, I'll throw the link in the chat now. If anyone hasn't joined yet, sign up to the
Anyone
Patreon.
wants
Really
to
fun
join, sign
stuff.
up for our Patreon.
Definitely.
Here, I'll bring
Is
up
this
this one.
This is your theme, right? I haven't heard it in so long. Or is this
This is Limp Bizkit.
Oh yeah, of course.
That's my theme.
I got this. Thanks for coming on here. Always a fan of yours. Would been cool to see you in the mix now with their focus on the women. Is there anyone there you'd wish you could have done a storyline with?
Thank you so much for the support. I'm always so appreciative and grateful of that. I would love to work with Becky. I would love to work with Sasha. I'd love to work with Summer. They're so talented and have done so many amazing things. I've actually gotten to connect a little bit with Becky, like backstage at a few things and then just in general. And, she has a very like dope perspective on wrestling and just like life in general. So I think like, I would have really loved to work with her for sure.
Okay. We got one more for Rex. Cause he said she's been very good tonight. Who in the ladies' locker room had the weirdest habits? And which male wrestlers were known to be peeping Toms?
That's an amazing question. I don't know. As far as like any like locker room weirdness with the women, I know we all had like such weird things. Like, I say they're weird, but just things that are like superstitious, you know, like the socks that you wear for your really important matches. You just certain like superstitious things, like the things that you do to prepare beforehand. I always remember like the tanning escapades were always really funny. You know, like if everybody was in the show, like how the whole, you know, bathroom would be orange and like everyone just like, you know, just stuff like that. But I don't really remember anything like super weird or specific. I remember like a couple of guys, before, like outside of Gorilla, before, you know, they were like right up next. I remember a couple guys just like peeing in the trash can right outside of Gorilla. A few, you know, because they were like, I don't have time to run back. And it's like stuff like that that I was like, that's weird, but I get it. But nothing that I can remember that I'm like, that's so weird. But I'm sure if I like really thought about it, there would be a couple
guys would piss in the garbage can before they went out.
There was a couple times where it wasn't like a normal thing. They were just like, it was a show. It was like one of those shows where the locker room or the bathroom was like really far from Gorilla and you're right. Like, oh God, I gotta pee, you know, and like you're up next. So they're like, oh, and just, I remember that happening a couple times, just like throughout the years.
Oh my God. I've never seen that. That's funny. Well, Celeste, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight. And so what's your plan? You got anything you want to promote? Any social media or businesses or upcoming events?
Yeah, thanks for that. Well, first of all, thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for having me. Thanks for your graceful, allowing me to come in half an hour late. Essentially everything I do now is really so much all over my Instagram, which is my full name, Celeste Bonnet. And so as far as my business, my husband and I, if anyone's local to Austin, my husband and I just started doing monthly men and women's workshops with networking mixers afterwards. And so we just did one yesterday, actually. It was a really dope event. And then they'll be on the fourth Thursday of every month. So if anyone, again, is either visiting Austin or local to Austin, definitely come out to those. It's like $20 for the entire workshop. And I take the women, my husband takes the men. And we teach a portion or aspect of what we do with our coaching and just helping people really like just unlock themselves, understand how to regulate their bodies and their nervous system so they can just, you know, show up in the world and in a powerful, confident way and be able to speak from their true voice and really own themselves and you know, pursue their purposes. We're offering that. And we have a lot of offerings and they're always available on Instagram. And so if you're interested in any of that, you can reach out to me if you have any questions. And yeah, I'm usually sharing a ton of stuff that we're doing on there, and we're in Austin a lot.
Okay, so I'm confused. This is a workshop for fitness and nutrition, or?
Yeah, so my husband and I, we have a coaching business called Project This Is Me, and so we work with couples, we work with individuals, we work with people in groups, and we really work with people. It's you can say it's mindset, but a lot of it is like mind body connection, understanding how to get out of the head and more into your physical body and understanding your relationship with your body so that you can, you know, show up in your life. And we help people truly, like, you know, have a big vision for their life, visionary people that really want to create something innovative or do something really new and exciting. We help them bring that to life by helping them understand their different states of their nervous system and how they can approach their creative process in a different way, more regulated, calm way, more confident in their abilities and the ability to believe in themselves. So it's funny because, you know, that's my story with wrestling. I really never had that belief in myself and never felt like I really tapped into my ability and my gifts. And so I do that now in my life, and I help others, and my husband helps others with that. So it's really cool stuff. And, you know, it's essentially self-development, and it can be spiritual. It's, you know, different forms of biohacking, you know, psychology, mindset stuff. So it's a little bit of everything, but essentially just how to be the best version of yourself.
Well, that sounds so cool. Well, thank you, Celeste, and I wish you nothing but the success for you and your husband. And maybe someday we'll run into each other down the road, okay?
That would be awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great time on your watch-along.
Oh, yes. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Have a great night.
Good night. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.